This is Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio. Okay, I talked to Anya Dobrovolsky of the Eugene Solidarity Garden, and listen for part two where she talks about how important it is for the city to help projects like this that help the local underprivileged. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media.
All right, and so you just have this little triangle that's one space over from your house, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what was it like when you started?
Well, Andrew, my husband, and I, we moved into our house 7 years ago. And actually, when we moved in, it was more like a patch of mostly wildflowers. There was a lot of chicory growing in it and Queen Anne's lace. And then over the years, quackgrass invaded in it and kind of took over. So quackgrass is a European grass, and of course moved over here without any of the its cohabitants that would kind of keep it in check. And so it is a really aggressive rhizomatic spreader. It's very difficult to deal with. So that actually went and kind of almost completely choked out the Queen Anne's lace and the chicory that had been growing there.
What was your house? Your house is full of edible plants and stuff, mm-hmm. edible landscaping.
Yeah.
Right? Was it like that when you got here?
No, when we bought the house, there were a few trees, like the street trees, the ginkgos, and a big leaf maple on the property line, which is still there, and an English holly, which is gone, and a Japanese holly, which is still there. And everything else was lawn, except for this backyard area here, which was quack grass.
All right, but no lawn now because...
No, most of the lawn is gone. We've eliminated about 75% of the lawn, and hopefully in the next 2 years, the rest of it will be gone.
Because lawns are kind of a waste of water and resources.
Yeah.
You can't eat a lawn.
Yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings about lawns. I think, I garden for a living also, and when people tell me they want a low-maintenance garden, I usually say, well, that's not really possible. We can have water, we can have gardens that require very little watering, or much less watering.
Well, I should explain that we're doing this in the back of your house where you're doing some remodeling and improvements and have workers here that have come out graciously on a Sunday to do work. So we might hear some construction noise and some last-minute instructions while we're doing this interview. All right, so what lawns produce a lot of oxygen, but they're low maintenance, but not
yeah,
good.
Yeah, so they're like low maintenance in that it's a lot less maintenance to just mow every couple of weeks than it is to pull weeds and prune and plan your garden. But they don't add a whole lot of ecological value, and in fact, they tend to be almost as impermeable as like sidewalk is. That's why a lot of times you'll see lawns being watered and it's rolling off onto the sidewalk. It has like a very homogeneous root system that is kind of like a lot of rhizome, so it just forms a mat, and so water doesn't really percolate. So, you know, like in terms of water use, it's if you're wanting to keep a lawn green, it requires a lot of water, and it's a very inefficient use of water since most of it runs off.
It's basically a monoculture.
Mm-hmm, yeah, it tends to be monoculture, and then it doesn't add much ecological value in terms of habitat provision or anything like that. So we're getting rid of ours slowly, and you know we're pretty interested in our garden and trying to. I don't think we're under any illusions that we're going to be able to grow all the food that we need for ourselves, but we can definitely have a garden that we can enjoy fresh fruits and vegetables from, and that we can on. Even on our property is really small. Our property is less than half the size of the neighboring property, but we're able to grow a lot of food
on a small area. Yeah, and then in conjunction with other people, there's always, anytime you're gardening, there's always extra.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, and that's kind of, you know, I think capitalism has really trained us to feel like there's so much scarcity that we're living under, and one of the things I love about my garden, me and Andrew's garden, is that it's like a small amount of space, and it really showcases how much abundance you can have in a small amount of space. And that's what I wanted to do with the Solidarity Garden. Like that chunk is probably ends up being about the same square footage as the space that we have for gardening. And like working together with like kind of a minimal amount of hours. Most people are only there like a few hours a month, but it's like many hands make light work. And we're creating this garden that's going to help supplement a lot of people's diets in the neighborhood.
Yeah, and in conjunction with people growing stuff on their own property, especially. Yeah. But I mean, yeah. And I noticed once you get it established, it really doesn't take that much work. I go out in my yard for about an hour a day, a week,
yeah,
and pull some weeds and mm-hmm. and maybe do some shoveling, and yeah. It goes.
Yeah, I agree. I think once you've got your garden established, which I think, like, in my clients' gardens, I usually tell them to give it to like year three, so they'll really understand what their garden looks like or what their garden is like. That's the point where I think you start to feel a lot of that abundance is when your trees and your shrubs are established and your perennials are established. And, you know, they can put more of their energy into their fruits and into their leaves than you know, those first few years they're really trying to put their energy into establishing their root system.
But in the weeds, some of the weeds attract beneficial insects and, mm-hmm. and bees and things like that.
Well, yeah, and there's also, like, a lot of... I mean, the word weed is such a social construct. It's really, like, when I was in school, we used to say that a weed is just, like, a plant that you don't want or a plant that's in the wrong place. So I think there are definitely things that can become really problematic and threaten like larger ecosystems. But there are also things that provide some ecosystem services. Like I'm thinking of like dandelions here. So dandelions aren't really great for pollinators, but in an area where we have really, really heavy clay soil, like even if you decide to keep a lawn, the dandelions, their tap roots kind of break up that homogeneous net of roots and allow places for water to percolate. So even like with my clients who do, most of my clients have some lawn, I try to encourage them to like leave dandelions and other things like that have tap roots. And if they don't like them, they don't want them to spread, they can just chop the tops off and leave the tap root in to help water to percolate, let it rot out. It's more organic matter in the soil. So, and a lot of things that we call weeds also are things that we could be eating.
You can eat dandelion.
Yeah, you can eat like every part of the dandelion, I think. Don't quote me on that, you know. Queen Anne's lace is a carrot. Just so many things that we call weeds that can be eaten. I mean, I'm not like a permaculture person. I don't think that like every weed that succeeds should be left to do its thing. I do think we should be more selective.
That was a plant that had to be removed?
Yeah, quackgrass.
Quackgrass.
Yeah.
So, and it was tall, right? It's
yeah, it was probably like 18 inches high.
So you can't just put straw bales over it?
No. I mean, you might, maybe you could suppress it for a couple of months that way, but it has to be dug out because like the root system and the rhizomes are so robust. So yeah, that just has to be dug out. That's like, generally, I think of that, of quackgrass as something that, that it takes like 4 to 6 pullings or diggings out to get a patch really, almost eradicated.
Well, and the stuff you're going to put in there, it's worth pulling that out.
Oh, yeah. Grass
out. And, yeah. I'm having problems with, there's a wild artichoke, or whatever
is it,
that is.
Is it a thistle, maybe?
Yeah, it's that.
Oh, it's probably Russian thistle. Is it like a kind of a fuchsia colored?
Yeah, very spiny.
Yeah, that's Russian thistle. Somebody actually just wrote a letter to the editor in the Weekly that got published about it a couple weeks ago, saying like, if people see it, they need to take it out.
It really takes off almost like dandelion too. The seeds just spread.
Yeah, that's one that is so noxious in terms of how aggressively it spreads. that when I see that in my clients' gardens, I try to dig it all the way out because I don't want it regenerating.
Again, pulling it, though, breaks up the soil when I pull it. It does a great... And then I just leave it laid down, though, rather as a mulch.
If it hasn't seeded, I would.
Yeah.
Or in my own garden, I would. In my clients', you know, a lot of my clients' gardens are more ornamental, and, like, there's a different aesthetic expectation. So in my clients' gardens, unless people explicitly want chop and drop, I'll usually put that sort of thing in the yard waste bin. But, you know, if it hasn't gone to seed, then it's not going to hurt in your garden. I definitely chop and drop in my garden, like, 99% of stuff. If it's something that I don't want to have to keep, if it's, like, something that is really spiny that I don't want to have to keep bumping into sometimes.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, I'll throw that in the yard waste bin.
But chop and drop creates mulch around the plants
and
maybe harbors some beneficial and some bad insects, but it basically decays in a good way.
Yeah, I'm a chop and drop girl.
And adds, you don't want to take those nutrients away from the soil. They're sitting inside the plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. For me, the most important thing is... it's just knowing, is that it has this thing gone to seed, and will it go to seed if I leave it on the ground? Because they're like bittercress. I don't know if you know that one. It has little white flowers. The has really, really charming leaves. It comes up in the winter, and then again in the fall, or winter, spring, and then again in the fall. But that one is really tasty. Great spicy addition to a salad. It's kind of a mustardy thing.
But it's all about the timing.
Yeah.
And that's less work. If you do it at the right time, it takes less work.
Yeah. Also those are one that actually are kind of viable, like an air plant. And so if you don't want to purposely be seeding them, those are ones that need to go into the yard waste bin. You can't just chop and drop those because they'll actually still go to seed, even if they're completely out of the ground.
So there's some horticulture knowledge that you might need, but...
Yeah, but there's books out there for that.
Right.
There's lots of books.
You don't need a degree in horticulture to do a garden.
No.
And there's failed experiments. Sometimes one year it fails, and next year you know not to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've definitely had those experiences in our garden. We've definitely had those experiences in the Solidarity Garden. You know, we've only been at the Solidarity Garden for a year, and I think we're still learning a lot about our site and about the gardening techniques we've chosen in building, not just getting like decent quality soil, but also like making sure that the soil structure is good. So it's been really cool to get to experiment there and have it feel pretty low stakes.
Well, because what was the next thing you did? Someone brought you logs from a tree cut?
Yeah, so to be sure, the quackgrass at the Solidarity Garden that we actually end up, the people who live next door own an excavator, and they actually excavated it and just took off all the topsoil, which there was still a tremendous amount of quack grass for us to pull, but they did like 95% of the work. There's no way we would be where we are now if it wasn't for them. Maybe we would have gotten a 20-foot by 10-foot plot dug out last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so for to a community garden and in these empty lots, it might take some work to get started.
Yeah, I mean, and I think if you have a friend who is like a contractor that, or you know somebody else with an excavator, I think that's such a useful tool if you have like some particular like invasive problems. But yeah, I mean, if you're just trying to take a place that's lawn, you could just do kind of more of a like a lasagna garden. You can probably just put cardboard down and put compost on top of it for a season, and then plant into that.
Or build
raised beds. Like a lot of community gardens just have raised beds, and those are great.
And that's better for toxins in the soil too, raised bed. Whereas I would think scraping the topsoil off, though, you probably got rid of toxins.
Yeah, I don't know. There wasn't really anything problematic before we had the soil tested for heavy metal and that sort of thing. I was working with I studied landscape architecture at the U of O, and I was working on initially before like neighbors got involved, just with a landscape architecture grad student at the U of O who was writing about medicinal solidarity in community gardens, and they, as part of their master's project, like, they used our site as kind of an example, and they still volunteer in the garden, although they weren't there today. They're visiting family right now. But so they had the soil quality. They had the soil tested for heavy metals and other toxins, and there just weren't any, which is not surprising given, like, the history of the site. There's never been any industrial here. There's not heavy, you know, there's obviously a lot of blacktop next to us, but there's not a lot of traffic going by. So, you know, if we were next to, like, I don't know, if we were next to I-5, I would be more concerned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but the fact is there was just nothing that was really a level of elevation that we needed to be concerned about at all.
Well, so everything has been donated, though, basically. The topsoil and the wood that you made. What do you call those beds that you make with wood?
The hugel cultures?
Yeah,
so me and some other neighbors have put some money into purchasing soil from Lane Forest Products. We can get a discount at Lane Forest Products now, which is great. And we've done a little bit of, like, some neighbors have done who love what we're doing but don't like gardening. They've done, like, some, they'll go to their neighbors and grab and collect donations to help us buy stuff. But let's see. So the wood chips and the logs, the wood chips mostly came from local arborists that we had connections to who needed somewhere to dump chips, and so we became a chip dumping site for those guys for a while. And then and they had some logs for us, and then
because they have to pay to dump it at Lane Forest Products, so they'd rather give it to you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think they're just, like, some of the workers at this one arborist were just very aligned with what we're doing there anyway.
And all that sawdust, all those wood chips come from arborists?
The wood chips came from arborists. The sawdust we just picked up from the Lane County Fair, from the stalls at Lane County Fair.
Neat.
And then a lot of the logs we got, some of the logs we got from arborists, like a good amount. Some we got from some of our volunteers' backyards. And then, you know, there was a lot of free wood around after the ice storm last year. And so we did a lot of just collecting stuff from around the neighborhood. Like, that's in the winter. That was a couple of our work parties, was just going around the neighborhood and loading wood into the back of people's trucks. Uh-huh. And then building up the edges. Another thing that the hugel cultures, that I guess that's pretty much where all of our stuff came from. Oh, and I have a friend who has horses and, like, giant piles of manure, so we can go to their house and get manure.
Well, because I used to get manure from, there was a guy on Prairie Road with horse stalls, and he would load it up with his backhoe, or whatever that is, for free. And it even cost him, you know, it cost him money to run that backhoe and repair it.
Yeah, but he got rid of all that poop, though.
Yeah, instead of taking it to the dump. So there, if you look on Craigslist, you might be able to find something like that.
Yeah. Or you can contact me, and I'll hook you up with my friend who has all the horse poop that she wants to get rid of.
Oh, right. Okay. But you have to load it yourself?
Yeah. You have to have your own vehicle and load it yourself. These are just, like, just an old friend who had horses when she was growing up. And as an adult, her parents were like, the horses are yours. And so now they only have one elderly horse left, but they do have 3 horses worth of poop.
Uh-huh. But that's what I mean. It was so lucky to have this guy that had his own tractor that would at least load it up into my truck. Mm-hmm. So, running your wash water, though, if you could.
I've heard people can water their plants that way.
Well, I did that in L.A., and the grapevine grew over the garage because there's
That's
so much
awesome.
Phosphorus in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just my laundry. It was a group of people that I was staying with.
Yeah.
And there was so much water that the thing grew over the garage.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds very fruitful.
So, because gray water, though, all it is there's a pathogen that you just need to keep it from the air from getting to it. You just need to run a French drain underground and. There should be no issues with pathogens.
Yeah.
But, all right, so continuing on with the, what was the next step for the community garden over here?
Well, so that first weekend, the neighbors did the excavation, and we spread some layers of compost on the soil. And we got right to planting that first weekend. It was Memorial Day weekend of 2023. And we pulled a bunch of starts, like our divisions, out of my garden. We had a few trees. And then Down to Earth ended up donating many, 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 many starts to us last year.
And right, you can find a lot, even Walmart and stuff like that, have plants that are on their way out or whatever, or at the end,
totally.
Or at the end of the season when they're, totally. Especially Walmart changes their whole displays.
Yep. Yeah.
At the end of the summer.
Yeah, you could probably, I imagine, a lot of nurseries, they get stock in that is 10% too ugly to go on the retail floor, but will grow just fine in your garden.
Just a little tender care, tender loving care.
Yeah, and then also there are a lot of things that if you time it correctly are not too difficult to grow from seed. So things like lettuce and kale. I would recommend looking at radishes, great place to start, beets. A great place to start.
When those pull up the soil, too, when you pull them out, they break up the soil.
Exactly.
For a no-till method.
Yep, yeah, and you could also just grow them for their greens and eat the greens, too, and if, you know, leave the root in the soil if you want. But stuff like that is really, in carrots also, really easy to start from seed. And
what it is, these packaged seeds have a code date on them that there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's like Down to Earth also has donated a lot of seed to us. And that's exactly the thing, you know, it'll say, you know, packaged for 2023. But most seeds are viable for like several years, if not decades. And so
you might just not get as much of a yield, maybe, is all.
Yeah. Or you will also.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like packaged for 2023 and you're growing them in 2020, you're planting them in 2024, you're gonna get plenty of yield. We didn't grow much from seed last year, but this year we planted a lot of lettuce seeds and radishes and beets from seed, and you know, we've got sowing for fall, for late fall harvest now. So we planted all those starts, and then I think the biggest challenge for us starting out was figuring out what to do about irrigation, and I think that's probably going to be like the one of the main hiccups for this type of for this kind of like non-sanctioned, non like city or county, non-government supported community garden.
Right, and it's not in the back of someone's yard, or it's not in someone's
right,
yard.
Right, exactly. And at first we were hand watering it, like just running like 200 feet of hose from me and Andrew's house out to the garden, and I was hand watering it, but that was taking me like 2 hours a night of me being really focused on that and not being able to do all the other things that I need to do to live. And so pretty early on last year we ended up setting up a system of soaker hoses, and then I just have to run the hose out from my yard out
and
to the
up.
garden, and that's much easier. And I try to coil it at the end of every watering session just to be a nice neighbor, just to keep things more attractive and avoid having tripping hazards out there in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
So water is an issue if you're going to do this on a vacant lot somewhere.
Yeah, you can't, I unless you're going to only plant a few things and hand water them, then I would really recommend trying to figure out something. Either a neighbor that's supportive, or do something really close to your home where you can easily, if you are in a situation where you can easily run water out to something.
But in Oregon, there's only like a month that you have to do that with. You can almost make it for, no.
No, not anymore. I mean, maybe like, if we had started this community garden 7 years ago before the summers got really harsh, you know, because we used to have cloud cover until 2 in the afternoon, 3 in the afternoon, right?
Right.
And our highs were in the like.
It used to rain up until August.
Right, and the highs, like a regular high temperature would be like 80 degrees, but now a regular high temperature is like mid 90s. So,
you need water.
You need water. I mean, you can heavily mulch, and that can take the burden of watering off. But we started irrigating the Solidarity Garden this year, I think in mid-June, and we'll irrigate it through October when it starts raining again. So I cannot overemphasize the importance of having a water source or a plan for watering. We've had people recommend rain barrels, and the thing about that is that you have to be able to fill up the rain barrel and have a place to store it,
right,
and you need to have a roof that the water is running off of.
And it's hard to haul. It's very heavy, and it pick up. You don't haul water in a pickup truck very easily.
No.
And one thing I will say is, in the desert, the Army Corps of Engineers did an experiment where they dug these giant trenches in the desert, and the rainwater would collect in the bottom of these trenches, and then that would grow tree cover, and that would create a kind of an oasis in the desert. So there's ways to make it a very little amount of water that you would need.
I mean, I think there's ways to have less water. I think if you're trying to produce food, that's a little bit different. But
especially on a giant field that you're trying to do, because what I'm going to get into with you is, over by me, the railroad tracks, there's a big field over there that's three blocks from my house. So it would be difficult for, that would be a big project that.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say start small, right?
Yeah.
But think about, like, what kind of planting makes sense, because what we're trying to move towards in the Solidarity Garden is more trees and shrubs and perennials than what you often see, which is like a lot of annual vegetables in community gardens and maybe a few shrubs.
Because it's less maintenance.
It's like there, trees and shrubs long run are going to be less water intensive.
Once they hit that tap root.
Yeah.
Down there.
Yeah. Once their roots are established. And we've mulched heavily enough that the soil does stay fairly moist most of the time, especially in the flat areas. The hugel cultures are really where we're having challenges keeping the soil moist enough, and that's, you know, we're learning about the soil structure in those. But I think mulching really heavily is really key. But what I was going to get to is, like, you have this huge field. It's sounds like several hundred yards away from your house, then maybe it's like really thinking about what's the best kind of planting. Like, maybe a vegetable garden doesn't make sense. Maybe it makes more sense to be doing like a pollinator garden with annual wildflowers that are going to, you might not be providing food to humans, but you are providing a bolster to your neighbor's gardens, and you're in solidarity with those pollinators, and you're providing habitat. And probably if you're in an area that has an industrial history and you're worried about pollutants, then you're slowly working towards remediating that soil. But you're not worried about giving people food with pollutants in them then. Or you can be thinking about, like, long run planting woody plants where the trunks are going to be absorbing the toxins, and the food is not going to be so concerned. But I would definitely start by doing some soil testing.
But raised beds. And how did you get people to come here to work in it? But you're not here to, you don't have a crew that can just come to people's houses and start a community garden.
No.
That's not what you do.
No.
But you can help people. You will advise people on how to do that.
Yeah, I can talk. I'd be into talking to people about that.
If they come here on Sundays at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, or they could email us. It's eugenesolidaritygarden@gmail.com. You know, like, what we've got going there is like this multi-year project with kind of like this food forest agroecology long-term goal. And the first year it made sense to have a lot of annuals because those were the donations that we had for plants. And but longer term, I want, like, my goals with this project were to provide some snacks for the neighborhood that people can just feel comfortable coming and picking from, and then to to bring some more shade into our neighborhood, because living next to all that blacktop is pretty harsh. And one of the, like, in the face of climate change, I think one of the things that we really should be focusing on is providing more shade.
There's a heat island effect.
Yeah, there's a heat island effect, and there's that everywhere. That's what lawns contribute to, that heat island effect as well. And so that's my hope. So you were asking, anyway, you were asking how I met the people who volunteer here. There was a group of us who ran a slate for our neighborhood association. We're not down with the way that our neighborhood association behaves as a, like, paragovernmental representative of the neighborhood and of neighborhood sentiment. I didn't feel like they were accurately representing the diversity of opinions in our neighborhood.
Right, they're kind of a homogeneity organization. They want everything to be the same.
Yeah, and they're very, like, a very kind of neoliberal, moderate, center-right sort of group.
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried, and we got close. And we all of us kind of met for the purpose of doing that, and we jived. And I told folks about my interest in this plot and how I was working with this grad student, and the grad student wanted to get a couple of plants in the ground, and people were really excited. And so our first work parties were some of our next door neighbors who still come to garden, Jacob and Mady, who you've met, who live around the corner, who were part of that slate, and some other, it was mostly folks who had kind of either were running on the slate or people who showed up specifically to vote for the slate. And we just decided, like, okay, we didn't win this time, but here's something we could do together to start building some more participation in the neighborhood. And that was it. And then we put some signs up and said, you know, if you want to volunteer, this is when we're doing our work parties. They used to be on Fridays, now they're on Sundays. Everybody is welcome. Even a center-right neoliberal can show up and work in the garden with us. And
as long as you're not, like, a lawn person.
You can have a lawn at your house and work in our garden. That's fine. You're not planting a lawn in our garden. Or if you do, we'll dig it out after you leave. But,
well, so people showed up because of flyers that you put up.
Yeah, and then we also, we got the Weekly to write a story. We had contacts at the Weekly, so they wrote a story. There's a reporter from, I think he's at KEZI or KVAL, who lives in the neighborhood. They came and did a story, like, the first weekend of our work party. A few reporters at the UFO, like Daily Emerald, and some journalism students and stuff came and did stories. So that's kind of spread the word around. But I think most of the people who keep, and then also Jacob put us on the DSA's calendar. And so,
Democratic Socialists of America.
Yeah, he had a local chapter. And so, we've had people show up pretty consistently from seeing us on the DSA calendar. So there's just been a lot of ways. And then a lot of it is just people walking by in the neighborhood who are like, wow, that's cool, I'll show up sometime. And we don't really ask people to have a big commitment to it. Like, the motto is like, come when you can, stay as long as you'd like. So sometimes people are there every week for 6 months, and that's awesome. And then, you know, some people come once a month or every few months, whenever it makes sense for them. I think, like, with a project like this, it's really important to have one or a small group of people who are going to bottom line it and make sure that the momentum keeps moving forward and have some vision. And if people are able to keep showing up and they want to be more involved, they can. But I don't think things can be decentralized to the point where it's like just complete chaos and there's nobody making sure it's.
There's got to be just a point person, not necessarily a hierarchy, but some point people.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like.
But I notice you let everybody do what they want to do. You ask them what they want to do. You're not telling them what to do.
Yeah, I usually come in to me, or if like Jacob and Mady are facilitating, or Darren's facilitating, or somebody else, like, we'll come in with like, here are some tasks that we should probably get done this week. And when I'm that person, which is a lot of the time, I'll come in and be like, here are like 5 or 6 things I think we should get done this week. And then I'm like, yeah, what do you want to do? If people want more direction, then I'll say like, yeah, why don't you go and work on pulling these 3 kinds of weeds? But a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, I can go deadhead a thing. I'll figure it out. Or can you show me how to do that? That's the task I'm interested in. And also some people just want to hang out and be in community, and that's great too. I think there's room for all of that. You know, I'm good with people coming and like picking from the garden and just sitting around and sharing stories or learning or whatever, and not even putting their hands in the soil. Like it's a community space, you know.
The flip side though is no one knows everything about gardening. There's always someone that knows something that you don't know. So you're open to someone giving you some advice.
Oh, absolutely. Too, it's a learning space. And I mean, like, I'm...
Because I noticed you ask people, what do you think we should do here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I to be fair, I don't consider myself much of a vegetable gardener. And so, like, Jacob and Mady and Darren are all very awesome, very experienced vegetable gardeners. And, like, my education was much more in, like... native and ornamental landscapes, and much more like focus on trees and shrubs. Like that's where a lot of my horticultural knowledge comes. So like this is definitely a learning space for me too. And if you look in my garden, like most of what I have planted is not annuals. It's not annual vegetables. I have, but especially this year because of construction, we're not really doing any annuals. But our garden is mostly like a trees and shrubs and perennials and evergreens or semi-evergreens. So I'm learning a ton in that garden in terms of like a completely different gardening style. When I garden for people, like I only have like 1 or 2 clients where I'm really helping out with their vegetable garden, because that vegetable garden requires so much more care, especially annuals than like when you know I'm gardening for a living, and I'm usually at people's houses 1 or 2 times a month. I'm not there every week or every day.
Which you have to be for a at least once a week for a vegetable garden.
Absolutely.
I was talking to them over there about, because I thought I could wrangle some volunteers for my own projects, but that's not what you guys do. But how would one start if one has a field in their area or has a zombie house in their area that they want to get something going? Guerrilla gardening, what I do is throw out some potato in the fall. Mm-hmm. I'll throw out some potatoes and onions in a field, and I'm hoping in the spring that I'll find onions and potatoes out there.
I think that the most important thing for this sort of project is to have people who live nearby who are wanting to do it with you, and then you go from there and see what people's interests are, so what do they want to grow.
I'm thinking, I don't have a Slant account or whatever that you guys had. So
Signal?
Signal or whatever. You use a different
one. We use Signal.
There's so many of them. But I'm thinking of just putting some flyers in people's mailboxes.
That's where I would start. Yeah, that's where I would start. And I mean to, you know, like we don't recruit people on Signal. We just, like, when people have come around and they seem like, you know, like they're wanting to keep coming back, we'll just say, hey, are you on Signal? Okay, if you are, cool. I'll text you a link to our Signal chat. And that's like, Signal is where we, essentially in Signal, we use that to decide, like, maybe what are we going to do with the garden this week? Or if we're scheduling like a planning, like a organizing meeting, we'll use Signal for that. And then it's mostly for like kind of spreading good vibes about the garden or communicating about an issue. So if we discovered we have some sort of fungal infection and we're like, oh, we need to address that immediately, then we might use Signal to be like, oh, can somebody figure out what some of our options are for dealing with this powdery mildew or whatever.
Oh, so it's handy for emergencies, but I mean, you don't need that to get started
No, 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 no. You need
just email or phone number.
You need a group of people who are going to meet in person and decide what you want to do.
What they were saying too is that you guys aren't going to give me an arborist or a manure source. in my area, across, clear across town, it's better that I go find an arborist and get on Craigslist or whatever to find a manure source.
I mean, we could help you with making connections if we have them. Like right now, our arborists, our wood chip hookup is both of the people who used to work for that company don't work for them anymore, so we don't have a wood chip connection right now, but when we have them, we'll share it with you. Absolutely, why not? Like, okay. Because like an arborist, like if an arborist is going to come dump chips for us, they're only going to dump the chips for us if our garden is in between their job site and their office. Right? Like, otherwise, so if they're working in North Eugene and their office is on Prairie Road, their truck yard is on Prairie Road, they're going to drive to downtown.
Right, it costs a lot to maintain their equipment.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to, like, spend extra gas driving down here to drop off wood chips.
You can't expect them to.
Right, but if they're working in North Eugene, or in South Eugene, and they have to, at the end of the day, they need to go to Prairie Road and they need to get rid of the wood chips somewhere, like, they may as well stop here because we're on their way.
Mm-hmm.
So, likewise, if you're... So, you said you're on the tracks. Are you in Bethel or...?
It's 32nd Street and...
Oh, in Springfield.
Over by the Walmart there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Olympic and Centennial.
Yeah, so like, if... So, you're near the Lane Forest Products drop site there.
Yeah, sort of.
So, like...
It's right there.
Right,
yeah.
So there is sometimes going to be... There's going to be an arborist who's... needs to get rid of logs, who's going east. It wouldn't make sense. Yeah, so I don't, I think this is like about abundance. Like, I think there are sources. There's also free wood chips if you have a trailer. You know, you can get wood chips at Day Island Park. I have a secret wood chip pile that I found in my explorations at work. I could tell you where that is, although it's in Southwest Eugene. It's not convenient for you, but I'd be happy to tell you about my secret wood chip pile that I steal wood chips
from. If they show up here on Sundays at 10 or email.
To volunteer with us?
Well, no, and to get advice.
Oh yeah, sure.
Or email you at
EugeneSolidarityGarden@gmail.com. But yeah, I would be happy. Like my friend with the horse manure, she's in East Springfield. She's like almost Walterville. She will welcome anybody who wants to come and take her manure. You can take Mandy's shit. She'll give you her shit. She'll give you some shit. And then, like, the thing with the fair, like, I that was something I just learned of this year. People from the Common Ground Garden told us about it, and that's a thing that, like, anybody can do the day after the fair ends. You can just go and collect wood chips, and the people at the fairgrounds will thank you for taking it. Mm-hmm. That's what happened with us. And they had a backhoe, and we're dropping some of it in the back of Darren's truck. So if you time it right. But yeah, I mean, there's so much of this like waste product around, quote unquote waste product around. Like, I don't see any reason for us to hoard it. There's no shortage of wood chips and poop and you know, free leaves and all of that in our community. Like, and I think it's better that we help people get it for free than like, I work with Lane Forest Products a lot through my work. I'm really grateful for them. They're a very decent partner in my work, and they've been a decent partner in the community in a lot of ways. Not perfect, but like, you know. But I would much rather people get that stuff for free than have to like pay for Lane Forest Products to take it in, process it, and then sell it back to us. Like,
yeah,
that drives me nuts.
They have plenty of stuff, I think, too.
Yeah.
And straw bales are kind of expensive, but sometimes you can find a farmer. You go directly to the farmer and get him. I had one year, I had him loading my truck for me there off of the field.
Wow.
That was 20 years ago or whatever. Oh, but
yeah, I was going to say, I'd like to know that farmer.
That was down in Cottage Grove. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so wrapping it up, though, on philosophy of what... Or anything else you want to say, but what about the philosophy of gardening in general and growing your own food? Why do we need to do that? It's not just for yourself, it's for...
It's definitely not just for myself. I'm lucky to be privileged that I could buy groceries, and I do buy groceries. But I think that there's a few things.
I mean, centralized farming?
Yeah.
Good or bad?
Yes. I mean, I think there's like in the systems that we live in, we don't have much choice. So, and I'd rather not see my neighbor starve. But I think that I look at it, at what we're doing with the Solidarity Garden, as kind of neighborhood defense, as in if people are having a really rough day because they're hungry, sometimes them just knowing that they can get a snack and just being able to have the autonomy to go and forage some food, that I think that's our birthright, is to forage.
Because you don't have a fence around there.
Nope, definitely no fence around there. It's the community's garden. It's not ours. And it's public land. So I think it's like I've seen the power of somebody having having a hypoglycemic sort of moment, having a really bad time. I offer them a plum off of my tree, and they take two bites into the plum, and they're feeling better. And so I just think it's like a really easy route to having a more harmonious community. It's just to like live. It's just like a natural way to live. And I think that for me, what it creates is, again, that feeling of abundance. We're told that resources are so scarce, and I think it's just because like a lot of those resources have been stripped away by like the systems of control that we live under. And so growing food in general to me feels like a way to reclaim some of my autonomy, and then also doing it on public land and opening that garden up to anybody who needs food, not just people who work in the garden, like rejects that kind of like some of the systems of control that we're living under. And it also resists meritocracy, which I think can be seen as, sometimes it's seen as like an alternative to living under like the capitalist hegemon that we're under. But really, meritocracy is another route to hierarchy, and
where you're only as free as how much money you have,
or as much time as you have to contribute, which is related to money, or the ability level that you know physical or mental or emotional ability that you have. So
you shouldn't starve just because you don't have ability or have
I mean, like living in a community means that we're taking care of each other. And so for us with the Solidarity Garden, it's like, you know, it's so cool when people we don't know are walking through there, enjoying like what they see, enjoying the flowers, and then picking some blueberries. Like it's interesting. I even find myself sometimes having to resist like having an initial kind of urge to be like, hey, wait, that's our garden. You can't. And then I'm like, wait, no, this is what we're trying to do. That's great. I mean, I don't approach people that way, but it just feels like that's so, can be so trained into us, can be so trained into me, that to feel like I had to be protective over this thing that I did. And it's like, oh, wait, they're just picking berries. They're actually stimulating new growth, and they're taking what they need, and they're feeling empowered to take care of themselves. You know, in the context of like a community that's helping to provide these resources.
This is how our relationship to plants was for thousands of years, or for millions of years.
Jenna, who was the designer who I was working with initially over there, they wrote this beautiful letter to the Solidarity Garden and its gardeners as part of their master's project, and they were talking about like foraging being a birthright, and like systems of government have created these kind of sanitized landscapes to help them evade liability. And we even, like, when we've had like a little bit of a brush up with the county, who like 2/3 of the garden is on county land, they've said, well, oh, this is like kind of a liability for us. And we're like, I mean, it was a bigger liability when it was full of discarded needles and broken glass. So people eating is a liability to you guys, because who knows what, it might be poisoned. Like, come on.
But you used to be able to go out in the forest and eat and live.
Exactly.
It would be difficult, and there might be some famine or here and there, but you used to be able to do that, and now they've created a society where you can't do that. You have to work.
You can't meet your basic needs unless you're willing to exist, unless you're willing to be dominated by the system.
In modern slavery, wage slavery.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's, like, what I think this is just, like, a small demonstration of how, like, using community, we can have abundance, and we also don't have to ask permission to do it. And now, like, those government entities, the city and the county, like, are actually supportive of what we're doing. Not that that's what we were seeking, but, you know, we've said to them, like, well, this is what we're doing. How are you going to help us? When they've approached us and there was some friction, and their response is like, oh, I guess we'll get a memorandum of understanding together. And hopefully they do that so we can be there longer. But I think, like, if things went sideways for us, we would just start gardening there again. Just keep gardening.
Thank you.